this weekend. We'll get into that a little later on, because right now joining me on the line today is a man who really does need no introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway because he's an absolute legend in football broadcasting. He's a voice of Eurosport here in the UK and just a damn good commentator who knows all about the European game and the world game. He's the man who's introduced us on World Football Daily and encouraged us to follow more futsal. He is, of course, Mr. Tim Capel joining me on the line. Tim, how are you today, mate? It's a pleasure to have you on board once again. It's been far too long. How's the summer been, mate? I hope you're well.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, it's great to get back to the European football season. I mean, the one irritating thing we've had to overcome in the last few weeks is the fact that we had all the dramas of the transfer window a week and a bit ago. And then we've got this two-week break, so nobody can see all this fantastic new talent that they've had arrive, over that incredible 24 hours. And I mean, it was this time. I think this was one of the very first times I've been doing it. I was just about to turn the TV off. And then, Fellaini is going to Manchester United. And then, there was just action all the way. It was a great day. It was a really good day.
Are you somebody that really enjoys the action that comes with the transfer deadline day? Because there are a lot of critics who have come out and said, we don't like it. We don't like transfer deadlines in general. We don't like the fact that it's before the start, during the season. It's not over before the start of the season. I mean, you sound like somebody that really enjoys this kind of excitement and the finale.
Well, I think, who is it who's doing that? You know who the people who are saying that. Those are the people that have either missed out on a target, didn't get their target, or didn't have the money to buy anybody. Now, you won't find too many people at Arsenal complaining about the transfer window, not after the rabbit that they pulled out there on the final day with Mesut Ozil. It's just the theatre, the drama. It's something else that adds to, to our football life, if you like. No, it's not, of course, ideal, and there will always be detractors. But quite frankly, there was sod-all else on Monday night, as far as I could see on that evening. And so it made for a compulsive viewing.
It is kind of the build-up and the tension down to those final few hours. You say you won't find Arsenal fans complaining, but what's your take on the Mesut Ozil transfer?
I think they would have liked to have had Ozil, obviously, on board before that final dramatic couple of hours, the final 24 hours. But, they got him in the end, and let's be honest, Sky make a good, they make a good day of that, and these days, now what you find is that, fans just turn up at football grounds, don't they? Because they know that there's going to be reporters out there. If there's a sniff of a rumour you're going to sign somebody, then, you'll find, legions of fans appearing as they were at Arsenal and all over the place. It just adds something. It's not perfect, but then what else is?
It at least gives something back to the fans in terms of tension and finale, as you say, Tim. And as you said as well, we wait now to see how these players will fit into their sides and as they all go off onto the international break. Obviously, great action coming from the international games as well. But a side that won't have enjoyed this break at the moment will be France, taking on Georgia, drawing 0-0 and handing the group almost, if you will, at least the power in that group, back to Spain once and for all. France will be incredibly disappointed to have not picked up a win and be clinging onto the coattails still of Spain as we approach the final two games of the group stage.
Yeah, but I don't think that there was anybody realistically that thought Spain were going to lose that group, to be quite frank. Benzema's been getting dreadful critique. I mean, he's going hours, 18, 19, hours without goals for the French. And I was reading a piece with Deschamps yesterday, and of course everything is centred on Benzema. And he said, look, Benzema isn't the problem, or Benzema isn't the only problem. I have 11 problems. And of course, you think it's only France in 1998, the European Championships in 2000. The recent history has been laden with success. It's only been since 2002, where they had that something of a debacle where they opened with Papa Bouba Diop's famous goal for the Senegalese, and it's been going downhill at a rapid rate ever since. And the thing is, people remember the France of 1998 and 2000. And what's happening now is that generation is now moving into coaching and management. You're seeing all those players there. And inevitably, they're having to answer questions about comparisons of generations. And they just said, well, look, you know, it's quite simple. This generation isn't as good as the one that won the World Cup. It's rather obvious. And you know, it's just things go in cycles. They're having a problem. I think the second place is where they're at, and the playoffs is where they're going. And I think there aren't too many people that would have predicted that it would have been anything other than Spain 1, France 2, and the rest nowhere.
Does this kind of pressure from the recent success, as you say, 98 and 2000, does that mean or add even fuel to that fire that causes that combustible French squad that we always see at major tournaments now? There's always something happens last year, of course, in the Euros. There was that incident with Nasri and the journalist and a few fallouts leading up to the tournament with, I think it was Evra wiping his bottom on the subs bench with the French shirt or something like that. And does that add more pressure, the recent success then? That's why this France side can be so combustible.
Well, yeah, of course it does, I think. And all of that generation, the people working in television, the people working in the media, you know, the journalists, the commentators, they're still the same. You know, these people were there, you know, and they saw this, you know, fantastic French team. You know, but you tend to forget that the generation before that was also not particularly successful. You know, they weren't even qualifying. Mm. I mean, people remember the generation of Papin, you know, and Ginola, who I don't think they've ever forgiven for giving the ball away against the Bulgarians, I think it was. And they had those two games they were had to win. It was Israel was the other one, and it was a complete disaster. And then, you know, 4 years later on, you ended up with, you know, a side, the name still run off the tongue. I mean, obviously, with the exception of Stephen Guivarch, who wasn't quite there, was he? But, you know, Carambeau, Petit, Zidane, Deschamps, and Leboeuf, Thuram, Desailly, Lizarazu, and Barthez. I mean, what a team that was. You know, Vieira was on the bench. You know, De Gary was on the bench. You know, they had Jacquet in charge. That was a magnificent team, you know, there's no doubt about it. And carrying that into another generation is impossible. Well, I suppose unless you're Brazil, you know, and you're churning players out. I mean, you've got to look at the French league as well. You know, and the French players that are now playing in, you know, the key European leagues. It's not as it was. You know, Ligue 1 is not a great league. You know, no matter what people say and how they want to dress it up, you know, it isn't a particularly great league. You know, if you remove the massive funding to the likes of Paris Saint-Germain and Monaco, obviously, as well, simply, you know, France are simply, you know, an average team at the moment.
Elsewhere, the other side, major side, of course, in their group, it is Spain. As you say, it was always going to be a difficult task to overhaul the European and world champions. This Spain side that played Finland, was it a little bit of trying out something new? Because for once, it wasn't a side that was completely dominated by Real Madrid and Barcelona players. We had David Villa in there, of course, who's just moved from Barca, but Mario Suarez, Koke coming in as well. Atletico Madrid players starting to get into this side. And do you think there's a chance that complete dominance of Barca and Madrid players is now going to slightly be overhauled in the starting lineup with the success that Atletico are having at the domestic level?
Atletico is a good team to watch. I mean, you know, Diego Simeone's done a fantastic job there. Again, I mean, there was a piece, an interview that he was doing the other day talking about, you know, the qualities in the Spanish league, and he's saying he wasn't particularly complimentary. Actually, he's saying, yeah, the Spanish league is, at times, it is a dull league. It's a boring league. You know, you have two teams that are on a completely different planet, you know, and then you have the rest. There's obviously problems with La Liga, funding, et cetera, et cetera. We know how these things work. But I think, I think the relief will be temporary until there's another raft of players rolling through. I mean, if you look, Alba, Ramos, Xavi, Iniesta, Pedro, Fabregas, Davide, of course, is there. I mean, there's still a fairly hefty presence, from the two teams. It wasn't a great performance in Finland, I saw some of the highlights. Timu Pukki, the number 10 who was playing for Finland, had a lot of chances in that game, actually. If they'd have had, wind the clock back a few years, if they'd have had a Jari Litmanen in there who could actually put the ball in the net instead of a guy that couldn't, then Spain might have been in a bit of a different game. It wasn't, it wasn't the greatest performance from Spain. And, I think, will they win the World Cup? No, I don't see them winning the World Cup next year, to be perfectly frank.
Is that because they're not the same side that they were, or is that combined with the fact that it isn't South America makes it a tougher challenge?
It is in South America and it is a tougher challenge. I think the pressure to win and to do well on Brazil, we'll see. When they're there being followed by the entire nation, I think the momentum behind that is going to become very, very difficult to derail. And I think you saw it in the Confederations Cup. The average became suddenly incredible, amazing. There will be players that surprise maybe by getting selection. I mean, I was watching a match last night, actually. Cruzeiro playing Flamengo. There were players in there. A guy called Ribeiro, who was absolutely magnificent. And, some of these players are knocking on the door of getting selection to the Brazilian team. And so I think people take it for granted. They think they know that who's going to be in the Brazilian team, but they don't. And there's still a lot of places up there for grabs. It's interesting because we've got the golden generation, if you like, aiming to have this one last hurrah. You're seeing once again, a rise in the level of the influence of people like Ronaldinho. You've seen the two goals that he scores last week, the free kicks, and all of a sudden his name's back up there and he's being discussed. Kaká coming back to Milan and making his debut back there on Saturday. And the cameras will be following him. So I don't think we know who's going to be, obviously we'll have an idea, but I think Brazil are going to be very, very difficult to derail.
I like, Tim, how you mentioned, by the way, Jari Litmanen for Finland, and of course, Jari Litmanen, an ex-Barcelona player as well. I mean, everybody needs a Barca player in their side at the moment, that's for sure. Another team who did actually cope very well in South America during the Confederations Cup, but Italy with a solid 1-0 win over Bulgaria with a few starters missing. The Italians, though, are growing in confidence the closer we get to this World Cup. And the Confederations Cup was very much a positive benchmark for them of handling being in South America. Do you think Italy obviously went to the final of Euro 2012 and performed very well at the last World Cup too? Do you think Italy are going to be a real standout from the European category for being able to take another World Cup crown?
It's difficult to see that argument about a European team winning in South America. One day there will be a European team that wins in South America. It's been interesting because a lot of the conversation about the Italians in the last weeks has been about Prandelli and his successor, should he decide he's going to leave after the World Cup next year. And that's detracting a bit. And it doesn't do them an awful lot of good because, they need to be concentrated, they need to be focused, and they need to know that the man in charge is the man in charge, not somebody that's running down and his contract is going and he won't be there after the summer and it's going to be a last hurrah. It never, ever, ever works. And all it does is inject uncertainty. And footballers and football players don't like uncertainty. It needs to be certain. Whether or not the team is good enough to go there and win, you don't know. I mean, is it good enough to get to the latter stages? You look at the likes of who was playing. I mean, there aren't any surprises. Buffon and Chiellini and Bonucci Abate and Pirlo is still going to be there as well. whether or not they're going to be able to score enough goals. That is the key. I mean, they squeaked and a 1-0 win over Bulgaria. You know, wasn't a magnificently impressive performance. And look at who was man of the match on that night. It wasn't an outfield player either. Man of the match was Buffon, the goalkeeper. So, you know, there's still a lot on the shoulders of Pirlo to help orchestrate and direct and deliver the successes in football Italy, I think. They're always going to be difficult to beat. They're always a very good tournament team. You know, it's always a team that is a team rather than a selection of great, outstanding individual players. You know, you look back through the histories of the recent last 25, 30 years, back to, you know, 1994, you know, in the final. You know, they weren't teams full of outstanding individual players, although I suppose people will argue about that. There was a few in that era. But, you know, people will look at it and think, don't see anybody there. Maybe they'll just disappear. You know, maybe they won't be in the latter stages. But I think that they've got every chance of getting there and surprising people. You know, whether or not, you know, they win it. You know, I doubt it. I mean, wouldn't it be great? Brazil, Italy in the final.
I don't think I could take that one. Not after the horror that was World Cup 94's final, and I had to watch my hero Baggio put that penalty over the bar, Tim. That's a very destructive thing for a young lad to see. I don't know if I could take another Brazil Italy final there, mate.
When you think of what was on the field that day. Yeah, the players. But I mean, you know, it's funny how time misses things over. You look at Roberto Baggio was there, and he was only in his mid to late 20s. Then he certainly wasn't past it. You know, they chucked Daniele Mazzaro in there. That was after that performance for Milan in the European Cup of the Champions League that year in the super final, you know, against Barcelona. I mean, that was a pretty good, you know, Italian team. And of course, Romario and Bebeto were playing. But Dunga was in there as well. And there was, you know, Marcio Santos was playing, I think, Aldair and Jorginho. I mean, lots of top quality players, but they delivered a forgettable final, that's for sure.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly. The only thing that was a rollercoaster affair was the fact that everybody was just got tenser and tenser as the game went on. There wasn't too much quality in it, that's for sure. Let's hope we don't have that again. Tim, just one last question, if that's okay. I really want to ask you about this Belgium side, because they've been in the press in England quite a lot recently because of the talk about the FA and how we need to restructure English football, and Belgium has been used as an example of that. They have produced this phenomenal international side on paper and have gone through qualification very well, haven't lost a game yet in a reasonably difficult group. Serbia and Croatia will be stern tests, especially Croatia away from home in that second to last game. Is this Belgium side, though, do you think it's the real deal in terms of being able to make some waves at a World Cup, or are we still need do they still need more experience and another tournament before they can really start showing off, if you will, on the world stage?
No, I don't think they need another tournament. It's funny, in the office the other night there was plenty of discussion about Belgium. I mean, the Scots, let's not be around the bush, put up a decent performance against them the other night. I thought, actually, there weren't too many people that thought they would be quite as competitive in that game as they were. But yeah, I mean, Belgium have got a generation, but they've been waiting, let's be honest, for a long, long time, you know, and they've gone through a very, very barren period before they've come up with this team. But, you know, if you look at the individuals, I mean, do you think the team, you know, Dembele, Chadli, Axel, Witsel, Fellaini, De Bruyne, Benteke, I mean, is that the forward line of a team that's going to deliver a World Cup? I mean, we know they've got a decent defence. You know, Van Buyten's still going strong at, what, 35? The Lombard and, you know, the Tottenham guys, their Tottenham was playing as well. I mean, all round, it is a very well-balanced team. You know, there's no doubt, and the record speaks for itself. The thing is, these days, I don't think you'll find anybody would underestimate the Belgians. There was always, you know, when you look back at things like, you know, 1986 and 1990, previous decent Belgian teams, the Red Devils. When they used to arrive, and the Belgians went all the way to the quarterfinals in Mexico, they were beaten. Not Mexico. I think it was 86. Yeah, it was, wasn't it? They went to the quarterfinals. Nobody ever used to know about them. The world shrunk. Everybody knows about them. You know, would you be scared to death facing a team with Dembele, Fellaini, Witts, or De Bruyne and Chadli coming at you? No. Are they good enough to get out of that group? Yeah. Can they win a World Cup? I don't think so. I really don't think so. I mean, is this team as great, you know, as those teams that they had in the 80s when it was Guy Tease, the man that was in charge then, when they had the likes of Frankie van der Elst, John Mario Sass, the goalkeeper, and Enzo Schifo. Nico Klaassen was there, of course, went on to Tottenham from San Diego. I think you need to be convinced a bit more that they're going to be great. And I think a lot will depend on the group. You know, I think a lot will depend on the group.
Well, we will see if Belgium can cause a few surprises at the World Cup, or as you say, probably not going to be too much of a surprise. It's an unbelievable lineup. I mean, will England ever be able to produce that, Tim? I mean, we talk about
you
kind
look
of.
At it. I mean, if you people look and say, oh, you know, this fantastic Belgian team, and you know, all these fantastic and wonderful players, and because they were missing Vincent Kompany as well, and you know, they got Courtois in goal. And, would you say, I mean, if you transfer that back into the Premier League and you're having a chat about Tottenham, you know, would you be talking about Nasser Chadli and Moussa Dembele as being world-class players? I think you'd be saying that they were decent players. Would they be world-class? No, I don't think that they're right up there. You know, I think they've got a team. Wilmots has managed to produce an environment where they can flourish together, because they have down the years as well had the odd, you know, personality issue, you know, and the coaches have fallen by the wayside. You know, nobody has been able to actually put it together. Wilmots has done a great job. But, you know, I mean, this is from going to qualify to go on to win is, you know, it's something completely different. And to win on a different continent as well, you know. But I think one other thing outside of the people and the teams and the players that we all actually know from their time in the Premier League or some of Europe's great leagues, look out tomorrow, because there will be a little bit of history made tomorrow, because it's the second leg of the Asian playoff final. Uzbekistan and Jordan. It's 1-1 from the first leg in Jordan last week. And whoever wins there will make it into the World Cup finals for the very first time. And it's always great to see the levels of enthusiasm and excitement, you know, and Uzbekistan are a great football team to watch play very, very good football. I think they've surprised a few people that have actually watched, and some of their youth teams as well over the last 5 years or so, the under-17s, under-20s, are starting to produce, you know, some really decent talent as well. And we've seen in the Asian Champions League, although they did go through that phase of, you know, throwing enormous amounts of money and bringing in aged Brazilians and old Brazilian coaches, you know, Scolari to take charge. But, you know, it'll be a good bit of history. Uzbekistan are going to be big favourites. If you're going to tune in and watch it, look out for a player called Jeparov, a number 8, and a guy called Kazanov, a number 6, who is one of the quickest things you'll ever see on 2 feet. I mean, he is absolutely rapid, I can tell you. It's just a shame he can't cross the ball very well when he actually gets there, but he did set up the goal. So good game that will be tomorrow afternoon.
Tim, that's why we love having you on World Football Daily, because we never know where it's going to finish with you. Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic that we finished up with a discussion about Uzbekistan against Jordan as one of those sides looks to book their place in World Cup 2014. Tim, it's an absolute pleasure as always to have a chat with you. We always appreciate you taking the time out to join us. We've taken up far too much of your time today, so we'll let you get off and back to the day job, and we'll catch up with you very shortly indeed, mate. Thank you so much.
Okay, cheers.
Thanks very much. Mr. Tim Capel there joining us here on World Football Daily from Eurosport, talking all things World Cup qualification. Absolutely fantastic to have a chat with Tim. Always appreciate him coming on the show, as always, and giving us a lowdown about so many different areas of the game. And there you have it, finishing up with Uzbekistan against Jordan. Tweet into us, show at worldfootballdaily. @WFootballDaily on Twitter. Show at worldfootballdaily.com is the email address. Tweet in or email us if you catch that game. I would love to know your thoughts.